Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist, 30th of March 2019. The cover story is The Tribe That Rewrote History, DNA Reveals the Untold Story. This is the editorial, Earth, so the editor is Emily Wilson. Okay, it manages Earth's junkyard. Our most pressing space challenge is to clean up orbit. When the Soviet Sputnik probe Sputnik 1 started circling the Earth on the 4th of October 1957, it was the only artificial satellite of our planet had. That special station didn't last long. There are now 20,000 identifiable objects in orbit around the Earth, and many tens of millions that are too small to track. From flecks of paint to bits of old rocket debris from accidental collisions, the skies over our heads are turning into a massive floating junkyard. This situation has more than aesthetic drawbacks. Telescopes, space stations, and thousands of communication satellites have to navigate this minefield every day, traveling at speeds that would make them make even the tiniest collision disastrous, if unchecked. This situation could jeopardize the future of space travel, with humans trapped in a cage of their own devising. Beautifully put. Cleaning up our act will be no easy task. Nearly 400 objects were sent into orbit in 2018, and even more scheduled for launch a year ahead. On the longer time scales, Elon Musk's SpaceX has recently been given the go-ahead to put 12,000, which is more than half, which is satellites, into orbit to provide the world with cheap internet. How stupid. The companies have similarly lofty ambitions. With fresh rubbish being thrown into the heat all the time, responsible orbit management will involve finding ways to safely get shot of it all. A number of recent experiments using everything from harpoons, nets, by the way of grip is modelled on sticky go-go feet, have had promising results. However, some of these risk leaving behind more debris than they remove. 60 years ago, the most pressing challenge in space technology was how to get more objects into orbit. Today, the top priority is getting them back down again. High-tech Hancock. Health Minister Matt Hancock wants to transform the UK's National Health Service into a cutting-edge healthcare machine. Oh my God. And his recent obsession is using genetic tests to assess people's risk of developing a range of diseases, see page 10. His own tests showed an elevated risk of prostate cancer, he said, although experts pointed out that it was a pretty ordinary. It isn't the first time Hancock has been distracted by something shiny, new, and uncertain value. The politician is a keen supporter of Babylon, which says its artificial intelligence can provide health advice on par with the human doctors. The review published by The Lancet says there's no convincing evidence that this is the case, and AI may actually be far worse. That said, Hancock doesn't like all technology. He's been repeatedly railed against children's use of smartphones and called for official limits on screen time, despite the lack of clear evidence that suggests the device is harmful. We all want healthcare providers to make use of modern technology, use when appropriate. But would it be too much to ask that technology be first shown to work as advertised? Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful put. Okay, emission rises. This is gut-wrenching themes again this week. Global carbon emissions from energy use climbed to a record high last year as demand for the energy grew at its fastest pace this decade. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, said this week that emissions from energy use in 2018 rose by 1.7% to a high of 33 gigatons. The increase is equivalent to the carbon released from all air travel doubling in a single year. This is the first official confirmation that energy-related emissions have risen 2 years in a row. It now seems that the plateau between 2014 and 2016 was a blip. Quote, one could take a negative stance and say we're doing everything wrong. I think it's not as bad as the absolute numbers suggest. It could have been much higher, says Laura Cossey, the IEA's chief energy modeler. Overall, the world's appetite for energy was up 2.3%, with the biggest rise this decade. But switching from coal to gas power stations, which emit less carbon, helped dampen down the emission growth to some extent. While nuclear power had a good year as plants came online in China. And there was a strong growth in renewable energy resources, which meant 45% of the increase of electricity generation in 2018. But the speed of change isn't enough, says Cozzi, quote, we're putting the accent on the right policies, but they're not going strongly enough. Glenn Peters at the Centre for International Climate Research in Norway estimates, based on the economic growth predictions, the total carbon emissions will rise again in 2019 by about 1.5%. Crashjets get safety upgrades. More details have emerged about the two recent Boeing 737 MAX 8 jet stress crashes. Both planes lack two optional safety upgrades that could have warned pilots of a problem contributing to the crashes, the New York Times reported last week. The upgrades were linked to the MAX 8's Maneuvering Characteristic Augmentation System, MCAS, which was introduced to help avoid the plane pointing too far upwards and entering a mid-air storm. A report from Lion Air Crash, the first of the two crashes, suggested that the pilots had repeatedly to fight against the MAX as the plane pitched its nose into a dive 26 times. A part recovered from the Ethiopian Airlines flight, the second crash hints the MAX may also have been involved. Additionally, the original safety analysis of Boeing delivered to the national regulator to certify the plane was safe to fly had several crucial flaws, according to the investigation by the Seattle Times. Official reports on the Ethiopian Airlines crash won't be released for several months. Tough times for Britain's insects. A third of wild bees and hoverfly species have declined across Great Britain, raising concerns about decreasing biodiversity and the potential loss of pollinators. An analysis of 700,000 naturalist records going back to 1980 has found about 33% of the 353 species studied has declined in an extent of their range across the island. Well, yes, but does it mean that others have increased? I'm a bit concerned. The grey-banded mining bee pictured below is among the losers, down 38%. By contrast, the carter bee below right has increased its range by 82%. The assessment found the key group of 22 wild bees and hoverflies for crop pollinations have been doing relatively well. Overall, 11% of the species studied increased their range between 1918 and 2013. That is no reason for complacency, though, says Glenn Power of the UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology. Quote, it's a risky pollination strategy to rely on just 22 species. First all-women spacewalk axed. The first all-women spacewalk has been cancelled. NASA astronauts Christina Koch and Anne McLean were scheduled to perform repairs outside the International Space Station on the 29th of March. Now Nick Hague will replace McLean, as there isn't time to put together the astronaut spacesuit to fit them. Space suits are modular, with the torso, legs and arms all sized separately and then fitted together for each astronaut, according to NASA spokesperson Stephanie Schellholz. McLean's trained on Earth using both medium and large torsos. After a spacewalk on the 22nd of March wearing a large-sized torso, she realized that the medium one was a better fit. This may be partly due to physical changes that happen in space. McLean tweeted earlier this month that she has gained 5 centimetres in height in orbit. It takes time to fit together a test, a full spacesuit. So only one with the medium torso will be available by March. Rather than delay, NASA switched out one of the astronauts. Now, I suppose you could do that. The interesting thing is that things increase, you increase in size without gravity. Security flaws in government sites. Hundreds of official UK websites found to have vulnerability. Chris Storkel of Walker reports. More than 500 UK government websites have serious security vulnerabilities, putting them at risk of being hacked, according to an investigation by a team of security researchers. Of the 3,220 domain names registered under the gov.uk domain ending, 524 have unpatched vulnerabilities. The sites encompass everything from several government departments to local and district councils. In total, the 524 insecure websites, including the National Archive, the Scottish Prosecution Service, the Health and Safety Executive, have about 7,200 vulnerabilities between them. A team of security researchers working for IT companies in the private sector scanned all public-facing government domain names and looked at the service hosting each website. They found a hodgepodge of security issues which they described as severely unsafe. Because many government services are increasingly delivered digitally, there are often little choice but to use these systems. HMRC, the UK's tax collector, Her Majesty's Revenue Collector, I suppose, was not flagged as having any issues. The vulnerable domains each had at least one unresolved problems from the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures system, a list of publicly known software issues. The system rates vulnerabilities on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most dangerous based on how easy they are to exploit and the consequences of such attacks. The most commonly found vulnerability across the government websites, CV 2018-17199, is rated as 7.5. Web servers with their vulnerability sometimes store queries which are used to verify the accessing website longer than they should. This means that the attacker steals someone's cookie, which is a relatively easy task, so they can access their account. This vulnerability was posted on the CVE system in late January and is still found 128 times across different gov.uk domains. Some of the gov.uk vulnerabilities have been known for more than a decade. The EU data protection rules say vulnerabilities should be patched in a timely manner. The analysis shows that there are, The analysis shows that there is a significant weakness in the UK government's IT infrastructure, says Daniel Abbott, a security engineer from the IT firm Node 4 and part of the team. Many machines are using very old versions of software. Quote, "This demonstrates a lack of reasonable care and attention," he says. The domain with the most CVE issues, at 266 vulnerabilities, is run by the parish council. Okay. However, some central government services also have large numbers of unpatched holes. The former website of the Criminal Records Bureau, CRB UK, which is now forwards to the government's Disclosure and Barring Service, DBS, an organisation that handles millions of criminal records and checks for employers, has 133 vulnerabilities. Many issues seem related to the fact that websites appear to use versions of server software that are 9 years out of date. If the CRB gov host is compromised, an attacker could divert users, such as those seeking a criminal record check, to give employers to a third-party website, as it masquerades as the DBS, assessing personal details, potentially including past criminal convictions. Quote, "Poorly managed services can allow hackers to gain backdoors into secure government networks," says James Saw, part of the team. "That allows hackers to launch attacks. Unpatched vulnerabilities made the WannaCry attack 2017 possible, in which ransomware hit more than 300,000 computers worldwide, including thousands used by the NHS. Microsoft had already released a fix for the vulnerability exploited by WannaCry, but had yet to be installed on many computers." Quote, "It seems that there is a problem," says Robert Baptiste, a French security company, F-Security, who was involved in the investigation. "But until there is evidence of these vulnerabilities being exploited, it's difficult to say how much an issue they are," he says. The UK government told New Scientist it takes cybersecurity seriously and investigate it thoroughly. It added that departments routinely test their own sites for vulnerabilities and fix any that are found. Quote, "The public should remain confident that the all details held by the UK government, gov.uk, are safe and secure," said the Cabinet Office. Okay, by Donna Liu, AI versus animal brains in the battle of smarts. Some artificial intelligence can perform tasks with superhuman ability, but just how clever are they overall? As smart as a honeybee, a labrador, or a chimp? A competition called Animal AI Olympics will pit AIs against the tests normally used for study animal intelligence. From April, AI will battle it out in a virtual playground for a $10,000 prize pool. All the tasks involve retrieving a piece of food, but the skills needed to succeed vary in complexity. This mimics real-life experiments used to measure animal intelligence. Entrants will compete tasks they haven't seen before. They eliminate the opportunity to swat up beforehand. as is Matthew Crosby, Leverhulme Centre for Future of Intelligence in the United Kingdom. The Animal AI Linux will test a range of cognitive skills such as the ability to reason, navigate and learn about past experience. Quote, one key concept is object permanence. The understanding that objects continue to exist even when they're out of sight, says Crosby. Although it won't be in the competition, A, not B task is one such test of the ability. In the task, an animal is repeatedly presented two cups, A and B. For the first few iterations, cup A always contains a piece of food. However, once the animal is trained to understand this, the experimenter switches the food to cup B in plain sight. Some animals, such as dogs, continue to persevere with A, but others, such as macaques, instantly swap to cup B. The variety of task competitions will challenge one key limitation of many AI. Once they learn something, it's very difficult for them to adapt that knowledge to a similar, different situations. For example, one AI can outperform humans at a video game, StarCraft, and another beats a certain board game called Go, but they are useless at most other tasks unless completely retrained. A leaderboard will be provided during the competition, which runs until November. Well, there you go. A big hurdle will be to build AIs with general intelligence, systems with common sense and the ability to do a wide range of tasks based on limited data, says Chris Summerfield of Oxford University. Many AI algorithms mimic certain functions in animal brains, such as the visual system of primates, he says. This is why image recognition software such as used by Google's reverse image search hasn't been so successful. But AIs lack many other brain features that contribute to cognitive ability, including short-term memory or future planning. This may explain why AI are good at specific tasks but struggle to adapt to others. Testing AI systems in unfamiliar environments is an important step to creating AIs that can solve a wide range of problems beyond those they were initially designed for, said Crosby. Quote, we expect this to be a hard challenge, he says. A perfect score will require a breakthrough in AI well beyond the current capabilities. However, even a small success will show it is possible not just to find useful patterns in data, but to extrapolate these to understand how the world works. Magnetism aids the search for Mars water by Leah Kane. NASA's InSight lander is meant to be busy measuring seismic activity underground heat flows of Mars. That isn't going to plan, but using one of its less important sensors to make the very first measurements of the planet's magnetic field from the surface, which may help us find water. Since InSight's arrival on the Red Planet in November, its main instrument, a seismometer, hasn't detected Mars quakes. The lander's heat probe is designed to burrow 3 meters below the surface before it starts gathering data, but has hit a rock and has become stuck. Enter the magnetometer, which isn't even designed to study Mars directly. Quote, it's there to measure anything that might affect what the seismometer measures, says InSight scientist Catherine Johnson. But we're using it to do science anyway. The first results were presented at the Lunar Planetary Society conference in Texas last week. Unlike Earth, Mars lacks a global magnetic field, but it probably had one in the past, which led to magnetized rocks in the crust. Electric currents created by charged particles from the sun generate small magnetic fields in those rocks. That doesn't quite make sense. I find that really hard to make sense. Which the InSight magnetometer picks up. We can use the probe to how much water is locked up in those rocks, says Johnson. We've been able to do this before because orbiting spacecraft can only detect magnetic fields that make it all the way to the surface of space. That doesn't tell us what's happening on the ground because of this. We thought that a small magnetic fields on the surface would be 10 times weaker than InSight found. As the lander's magnetometer continues collecting data, we may learn how much water there is inside minerals underground and how strong Mars' primordial magnetic field was. This could help us understand why the planet is so different from Earth. Okay, I'm getting a bit tired. I'm going to take a break there. and see how I go. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.